Welcome to Kermode and Mayo's Take the Spoiler Special from me, Rufus Jones.
And me, Anna Bogutskaya.
So, Anna, usually this is called Mark and Simon Spoil Everything, but for fairly obvious reasons, this week it's just like a spoiler special. And we're going to be talking about Where the Crawdads Sing.
I mean, considering your track record so far in Take One and Take Two, Rufus, I think it should be called a Jones Spoiler Special.
Maybe it's all a spoiler special here. I open my mouth and Hollywood grumbles.
So we are taking a deep dive into the film. So if you haven't seen Where the Crawdaddies, I'm sorry, Where the Crawdaddies.
The Crawdaddies, I love it. That's what fans of the book are called, Crawdaddies.
Oh, the Crawdaddies?
Yeah.
Okay, well, maybe they are. I wouldn't know. I haven't read the book. So save this for when you have. Consider yourselves warned.
Let's kick off with a clip from Where the Crawdads Sing.
Tundra Swan.
How do you know birds?
My mom liked birds.
I can't read your note.
Oh, all I said was I had seen you a couple times when I was out fishing, and it got me thinking that maybe you could use some seeds and spark plug. You know, I had extra. Thought it might save you a trip to town. I don't know, I figured you'd like the feathers.
All right, then.
All right, then.
Okay, so that was a clip from Where the Crawdads Sing. Let's start with some emails to kick us
all
off.
Right, then.
First up, Julia Kane in Litchfield. She says, my book group went to see the Crawdads film last night as our summer outing. All of us bar one female and mostly around Mr. Mayo's age, which is what, sort of early 40s? Although it hadn't been a book club choice, you're welcome, Simon, we had all read it in the past 2 years and decided to go as a group to the film Food Deal at the Red Carpet Independent Cinema in Barton under Needwood in Staffordshire. Wow. We loved it. Several in tears by the end. We had a quick car park review afterwards, followed by a WhatsApp group chat that when we all got home, agreed it had been captivating. We were engaged from the opening scenes right through to the end. The timeline had changed as much as the court case was introduced very early on in the film, yet in a more linear sequence in the book, following the natural progression of Kaya's age into womanhood. This did not necessarily bother us. We knew it was coming. There were some minor differences. In the book, Kaya finds out Chase is engaged through the local paper, not on the street by chance. Jumpin', the store owner, is a black man in the South in the 60s. In the book, there are a number of scenes that touch on the racism he has to deal with. These are never really, they're glossed over in the film. And throughout the book, Kaya recites poetry from a local poet. There's no mention of her in the film. The final twist of the film remains intact, although the revelation is shown in a slightly different manner. And there's no reference to the Firefly poem, which so beautifully sums up the incident and could have been included. Seeing the film with 9 other like-minded people in an independent cinema was a highlight in itself. One of those wonderful cinema experiences I shall remember for a long time. Julie Kane. I saw this in a cinema and I was very aware that I was surrounded by book groups in the audience.
It's a book club film.
It's a book club film. There were people of a certain age, as book clubs tend to attract. And they, I was aware that,
you can have hip and happening book clubs.
Okay, well, I was just never invited to yours. I was very, very self-conscious that I was not enjoying this film 30% as much as the people around me who I sensed had seen the book, had read the book. I didn't like the film very much. Did you?
Absolutely not.
Right.
I found it laughably self-serious. Mm. And I'm a very intense reader. I read a lot. I think, you know, there are two different mediums and adaptations are very hard. One thing doesn't really take away from another. But when I say that this felt like a book club film, and I saw it at a big, you know, luxury screen where they were doing the press screening, the screen was more enjoyable than the film. There is just so very little to grasp onto for me. It is a beautiful film. It is essentially, I enjoyed it mainly for the interiors. The story should...
It's very much Deep South by Kath Kidson, isn't it? Everything is very lush.
It's very much a Pinterest board as a
right.
film. Everyone has perfectly tousled hair. I'm like, you live in a literal swamp. How is that happening?
Yeah.
Everyone is just perfect skin.
There's definitely
everyone
a J. Crew around the corner.
Daisy Edgar Jones's Kaya's, you know, interior game is off the charts. Yeah. It's fabulous to look at. And it sort of, I imagine, leaves people who are not dead inside like myself with like warm, fuzzy feelings that make them feel good about themselves. And it's about love and, you know, supposedly about belonging, about this isolated girl who becomes an isolated young woman who finds, you know, career, fame, and also love with an attractive young man who is blonde, and that's all I know about him because that's all that we're given about Tate.
There are two blonde men called Tate and Chase who I kept confusing.
Well, I confuse them a lot because they're both very tall, very handsome, blonde young actors.
Yeah, and they're like, called Tate and Chase, which just sounds like a Shoreditch coffee shop.
It sounds like a clothing brand from the mid-2000s. I will shout out, I think Daisy Edgar-Jones is fine.
She's good.
She's fine. Yeah. The role doesn't really demand that much of her. It feels a little bit like misery porn. You know, there's so much about how poor she is. There's so much about how downtrodden and lonely she is. She's not really given that much depth, really. It's just stuff happening at her. And I will say again, her interior styling is very, very good. But I do want to shout out Harris Dickinson, who UK audiences will see early next year, I imagine, or maybe late this year in Triangle of Sadness, being a completely radically different character. And here he plays a scumbag because Chase is a self-important, mediocre man who doesn't know he's mediocre, extremely rapey, very much abusive from the get-go, very much a liar, and kind of into essentially because he takes a fancy to the weird girl of the swamps. That's all it is. And he's also the murder victim in the film. And kind of, do you feel sorry for the murder victim in the film? No, you don't. Which I guess is kind of the interesting, supposedly interesting part of this movie, right? That we're kind of rooting for the murderer to get away. And the big twist that the listener alluded to is that Kaya, who is, you know, being proven innocent by the courts throughout the entirety of the film, in the very last couple of scenes, after she dies peacefully, the way that she wanted to, after having lived a full life with Tate and written many, many books about birds and swamp creatures, passes away. And then Tate finds out that she actually did murder Chase. So she did pull off this over elaborate plot to murder him and get away with it and kind of have all the alibis lined up correctly. And do you know what? Fine.
Fine is the word, exactly. I mean, I found that it begins with the legal case, and you think that's where the film's going to be, but then it has a structural issue where it goes back into her life, where the film then stays pretty much for the rest of its duration. Mm-hmm. And so you lose the jeopardy of the murder case because you've sort of forgotten the setup. And then when it reappears towards the end, I don't know, you're kind of there going, well, I need a big whiz-bang ending here to justify it at all. And it doesn't really
happen. Do you know the thing that really, I mean, it didn't really bother me because it, frankly, and this is the worst thing I could possibly say about a film, I just didn't care.
Yeah.
I just didn't care whether she got off or she went to prison. I didn't care who she ended up with romantically. I didn't care about Chase being murdered. I didn't care about any of it. The way that I would describe this film is that it is very neat. It's very neat in its production, and also it is very neat in the wrap-up of the ending. The whole thing with the necklace.
Yeah.
was just, it's so telegraphed. Yeah.
The police would have found that as well. It's not this.
It's so
this elaborately hidden,
extremely
smoking gun.
Telegraphed and kind of well put together to a point where it's like, I am put off by that neatness.
Exactly. Neatness is a great word because I was put off by the design of the film. Both visually.
I wasn't put off by that because I loved her a little.
It reminded me of Dawson's Creek, as
Dawson's
I said to
Creek
you earlier.
Is better,
this is
you?
The thing. I love Dawson's Creek, but and Dawson's Creek had moments of toughness, but it seemed inappropriate for this film. Initially, I sort of thought, well, is it just that we've got used to films about the Deep South having that deliverance, Mississippi burning mud and grit and heat and sweat about them, and actually,
but this is the thing. I love films and books about the Deep South. It's been an area, you know, my location that I've been fascinated with for no real reason for my entire
life. Yeah, me
too. Right. And it was the first place, one of the first places I visited in the States when I went for the first time. And it just has none of that sweaty, sweltering ambiance or atmosphere. I'm not even talking about kind of the grittiness of the Deliverance vibe, but just anything, just personality, just some fried green tomatoes, you know,
Yeah,
too neat. It's too polished. It is not sweaty enough.
I think there's
enough.
Some cans of molasses in the shop window.
It's not sweaty enough.
There's also an area which I've struggled to kind of frame, but if there's one thing that defines the Deep South in the 60s, it's civil rights.
Yes.
And I appreciated that Crawdads was going to tell you a story about white poverty. That's important, and that is clearly a story that can and should be told. But there is almost no issues around racism or civil rights, as the previous email sort of outlined, that there is in the book. It's not really there in the film. There are a couple of microaggressions which don't really do the period service. And so I sort of thought, well, if you're going to tell the story of white poverty, tell the story of white poverty and show us the horror and show us the stakes there. And I don't think the film
did.
Listen,
you're asking for too much about this film.
Yeah.
And I think, and this is, again, this is going to sound very dismissive. And it is. It's meant to be dismissive. This is white feminism.
Huh.
It's a white feminist movie. And I say this as a white woman. Like, this is a pinnacle of a white feminist movie. Makes everything really pretty and neat. And it's all about this one white, skinny white, pretty white girl's terrible experience. Mm. And how everyone, including people who are in very different social positions from her, who have to deal with another set of terrible circumstances at this time. Of course, this won't explore the racism of American society in the Deep South or anywhere else in the 1960s. It's more concerned with whether, you know, she finds a pretty dress to wear for her first date. Like, this asking anything to talk, even to illustrate or even to allude, it's just an illusion to the moment in time where this is set, is asking too much of this film. This is a book club film in the way that it is superficial. It's superficial emotions. It's all about the dresses and the makeup and the hair and the interiors. Everyone is secondary to the pretty white people falling in love and building their dream house.
We should also point out that it features, aside from Daisy Edgar Jones's really good performance, David Strathairn. David, people will know from Good Night and Good Luck and the Bourne
Wonderful
films.
Actor.
Brilliant actor, hugely well regarded. In one of the biggest wastes of a talent I've seen over the last couple of years, he begins and ends the film. And
he's doing Discount Atticus Finch, isn't he?
It's Pound Shop Atticus Finch, to the extent where even in the closing arguments, they put him in the Gregory Peck white suit
they literally
and
do.
Dark tie. I thought, you can't do this. And it's so, and right at the beginning of the film, it's established that he's retired, but he's coming back for one last job, which is to represent her, and that's it. And he has little or nothing left to do except to extemporize in a fairly bland way in the courthouse, and because you're not really engaged in the murder story and the legal case. He just sort of, he's like a satellite just off planet, just orbiting this story. And it just seems such a waste of a
You know what I really resented about it? I'm resenting it even more now that I thought about this film for the first time in weeks since I saw it and reviewed it. We don't even get to see the murder.
Yeah.
Why don't we get to see the murder?
I need to see how she did it.
Yeah, I want to see how she did it. Yeah. Don't just reveal to me that she actually murdered a man who is literally twice her size.
Because there's a revenge story there that you want to relish of her getting her justice.
Let's see her get her comeuppance on this absolutely despicable little pretty boy.
Agreed.
Again, shout out to Harris Dickinson. Really good playing a little despicable pretty boy.
Yes, he gets it really. Yes, it's all
smarmy.
It's all in how he looks at her, and it's not in the lines. It would read as a character as relatively inoffensive, but he gives it exactly the right the right spin on the ball. He's brilliant. Let's get a couple of emails to agree or disagree with us. Hi, both. This is Fiona, medium-term listener, first-time emailer. In response to your request for anyone who had read Where the Crawdads and seen this movie, this was a book we read and loved in a book group, so it was high expectations that we all went to see this movie with. There was something too clean about the image of Daisy as Kyra on the posters.
Yes.
Something Mark said in his review about it not being muddy enough was spot
yes.
on. In my imagination, Kyra was much more ragged and filthy, which she was in the six-year-old scenes. But she scrubbed up into Daisy.
Come on, they just gave her, you know, they put a little bit of dirt on her feet.
There you go. Her house was far more ramshackled until she got the money from her books. The steaminess and heat of the marsh comes across in the book, but did deliver in the film. And how on earth she managed to have clean, often white clothes on when she lived there, I have
See?
No idea. The acting was fine. It was a visually
yes.
lovely film, but something not quite right. And none of us from the book club could understand how she and her clothes were always clean and not in rag. It's a small point, but it's important, right?
It's one of the things we've been talking about.
It was an enjoyable movie all the same, Fiona says. So that's interesting. Shall we have one more as a possibly a counterpoint? Dear Dad and Craw. It was against a dearth of absolutely anything else to watch.
I mean, I'm sorry. What a missed opportunity to just title that Dear Craw Daddy.
It was against a dearth of absolutely anything else to watch apart from Minions that I decided to go to see Where the Crawdads Sing. After initially reading The Savaging by Peter Bradshaw in The Guardian, the so-so appraisal by Mark and the thumbs up by Simon, and subsequently reflecting on the gulf between the critics' 33% and 96% audience score on Rotten Tomatoes, I decided that there was enough of a range of opinions for me to make the trip to the cinema. And you know what? It was